Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the next episode of EYC. On the podcast today, we talk to a longtime friend of Brent and I, John Johnson. John received a Bachelor's of Science in Electrical Engineering from Michigan Technological University with a concentration in electrical power systems in 2011. He immediately began employment at Wolverine Power Supply Cooperative as an electrical engineer, quote-unquote. After getting up to speed with industry norms through some entry-level project work for a few years, John had the opportunity to engage with the business by leading multiple high-level projects. Upon earning his PE license in 2018, he was promoted to senior engineer. Shortly after, John answered Wolverine's job posting for an engineering manager and was offered the position to lead his team as the station engineering manager. Welcome, John, to EYC.
Welcome, everyone, to Engineer Your Career. I'm Brendan Timrak, and as always, I'm joined by Troy Bauman.
Hi, everybody. Dude, I'm doing excellent, man. Been another good week of work slash school for me, so I don't know, enjoying life.
Nice. Do you have, like, real winter up north? Because we don't really have it here.
Yeah, it's getting pretty intense. We got, like, 4 inches last night. It's supposed to be a high of 4 degrees Fahrenheit tonight, and then I think we're supposed to get, I don't know, they're saying 12 inches or something Friday night, so... Definitely
winter in wonderland,
the winter spirit. Yeah, looking forward to it. Looking forward to
that's awesome.
Getting the skis out. I have a snowblower, and it's like one of my favorite things. Like, it's on my tractor, and it's really fun. It's really, really fun. I don't know if it's an engineering thing, but it's like just being able to throw snow 30 feet with a tractor. I think it's like a childhood dream of most engineers.
That's a good point. We bought a snow shovel this year that we haven't even had to use. So, you know, you don't always get what you want in winter, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But on the show today, we have John Johnson. John, do you get snow? I think you're in northwestern lower peninsula of Michigan. How much snow do you guys get?
We get a fair amount. We're actually in a snow belt area, just kind of southwest of Gaylord, if anybody's familiar with that snowmobiling mecca.
Gotcha. So you get a fair amount of snow.
We do.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Snow's a blast. I really like it. I mean, there's definitely people listening, I'm sure, like, oh my gosh, snow, that sounds miserable. But I like to think about it, like, all the cool things I can do in snow. I can ski, I can do all these other things. And it's also just really, really pretty. One of the things that was different for me living in Detroit when I did was winter is just kind of like a wet, dirty, brown period of time. And I don't know, up here, everything's always really gorgeous and white. So I like it.
You're so lucky. We're definitely still in that wet, dirty brown period of time. And it's January, mid-January when we're recording this. So
there you go.
Very unfortunate.
Well, anyways, so today talking to John Johnson. John, we're really glad you're here, man. I think it's going to be a really interesting discussion. And I think to start, man, maybe we should just cue you off with just talking about how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I can do that. And I'd like to say I appreciate being on this program. I think it's a good positive source of information for anyone in our field, and it's something that I wish I had available to me when searching and thinking about what my career would be.
Yeah, man, we're really glad to have you.
So I suppose it all starts off in college, right? I attended Michigan Tech University, and I pursued an electrical engineering degree, which I ended up receiving a bachelor's in. About 2 years into my degree is about when I started to get a grasp on trying to make a plan for how to build a career. And my initial thoughts were that I wanted to do something that would provide a service to society. I think a lot of engineers have that goal in mind. And one of the things I thought of was that tied directly with what I was interested in is the electric utility. It's something that people are using, they're dependent on. It's no longer a commodity. It's more of an institutionalized way of life, and it's not going anywhere. So you have job security there too. So in college, I got involved in they have a concentration program for power systems where it pretty much involves taking specific courses and a certain number of courses weighted towards the power industry. So upon completing that, obviously I wanted to get a job, and I attended career fair. And at career fair, I met Wolverine Power, who was a cooperative. And at the time, I didn't even know what a cooperative was. I felt kind of ashamed by it in a way. And later I kind of came to my senses and understood that, well, I didn't grow up in an area that was served by co-ops. And that's not something they really teach you about in school growing up, or is talked about that often. It's more of just it's the utility, you pay them.
That's actually a really good point. I think where I grew up, we had co-op as electricity, and then there's other places, there's like utilities. So can you maybe in like a few sentences explain what a co-op is versus a normal utility?
Yes, yes, I can. And it all starts back from President Roosevelt initiated the Rural Electrification Administration. And the whole idea is that when electric utility was first being rolled out for people, it was concentrated around urban areas, cities, think of that. And at the same time, they didn't have the capacity to run electric lines out to the rest of the rural area of where a lot of people live and wanted to use that service. So co-ops were first formed by, think about it as farmers and people living in rural areas. And they formed these organizations. The Rural Electrification Administration, I'll just call that REA, essentially was a government subsidized loans at low interest rates that were offered to help people start the businesses. So they built the businesses and they built their own transmission and distribution systems to serve rural areas. And it just exploded from there. And it hasn't slowed down. Co-ops are a very strong presence. They support a lot of the electric grid in America as a whole, which was kind of eye-opening for me.
Yeah, definitely.
So do they, I guess, what do they specifically do that's different than a main utility?
Their business structure is different. So most utilities are investor-owned utilities where they have board of directors that may be led by different people with different interests and investments into the utility. Co-ops are all member-owned. So I work for a transmission company and we serve distribution companies. So we're owned by the distribution companies, which are then in turn essentially owned by the end members. We don't call them customers. We call them members because they're all members of the co-op, which is pretty interesting as well.
Interesting. Maybe, John, maybe we got to step back a second here for some people. You talk about transmission and distribution. For those people who are listening who are not familiar with those terms, I guess maybe can you start with how this all works, maybe from even like from power plant to member? Like what are some of the terms that you just used there and how do they fit within that chain?
Right. The three main terms are generation, transmission, and distribution. Generators, in order to keep them at a physically reasonable size, only generate at a lower voltage. It's still a pretty high voltage. It's usually around 15,000 volts, plus or minus 5. However, once you generate, you have to usually move the power long distances. And in order to do that by reducing and minimizing losses and actually making it practical, you have to increase the voltage to quite a high level. And once it is increased and transported, we call that the transmission system. Think about that as the highway for electric lines. Those are the larger lines you see, the lattice structures, maybe 100 to 150 feet tall. And once you get to the areas that you want to serve, we'll install what we call a distribution substation that steps the voltage down to a more usable level. And the lines coming out of those stations are more localized for the load. Think of it as the off-ramp for the highway. And those are the smaller poles you see along roads that feed your house.
So that's the distribution then?
Yep, that's the distribution system.
Gotcha. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like your co-op then is, you said it's a transmission company. So that means it focuses just essentially on the off-ramp in your analogy.
So actually a little bit different than that. We're a generation and transmission co-op. Some of the industry lingo, they call it a G&T, meaning generation and transmission. So we own generation facilities and we own transmission systems. And in our specific scenario, we also own the distribution substations. And that's another thing to note for utilities, is something that would be really advantageous for anyone wanting to pursue this is to to study different businesses and makeups and how they do that, because they're all a little bit different in who owns what equipment and where they draw the line and what they want to specialize in.
Okay. So working at Wolverine kind of almost touches a little bit of all that then, is what it sounds like. Is that correct?
Right. Yep.
Awesome. So let's go back then. You were at Career Fair back in college. You saw Wolverine. What was the next step then?
Well, I talked to him. I told him I was interested in a job. And that led up to a pretty straightforward process for my scenario. We had a phone interview, and then they brought me down to the corporate headquarters for a follow-up interview with the team. And after that, they offered me employment. And I've been there for the last 9 years.
So what was it like finishing up college a little bit? Because was this your senior year then, or was this kind of even before it had started?
Yeah, no, I actually lucked out quite a bit, because the spring career fair that the year I was graduating was when I was able to line up this position and secure it. So I had some level of risk involved, but it worked out.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's pretty lucky. Some of those late spring career fairs really can work out. So what was it like first starting? Because I think a lot of people, they learn about a company and they apply and they get a job there. But then once they start, if they haven't worked in that industry before, that specific company, things can be a lot different. What was it like for you starting out at Wolverine?
It was a little slow. And I think an important thing to realize on that is you have to give yourself time to get up to speed and to learn the business that you're going to be working for and learn how they do things. So call it training. And in our scenario, we're a smaller company, so the engineers typically are also project managers. So if you're assigned a project, you'll be the lead project manager to handle all the management aspects of the project, from working with accounting, setting up contracts, and as well as leading the design for the facility and essentially producing a construction set of drawings for whatever it is you're tasked to do.
Yeah, that's a lot going on, man. I mean, to kind of step into that, because so much of what you just described is not a class you take at school, right? I mean, you take different power systems classes that give you information, but I mean, what percentage of that you just described would you say you learned in school?
Really only the technical aspect of it. One of the larger learning curves was project management and learning how to be effective at that. And that was, I actually remember that was one of the questions in my interview. They asked me, they said, well, okay, we're going to give you a $5 million project. What are you going to do to track that, to keep it on track for budget, for schedule, and to make sure it's delivered as requested?
Wow. Yeah.
I remember I told them, I said, I have no clue. I said, I gave some examples of methods I might use to track, obviously, but
I think that's a great answer, John. I mean, I think that's I would hope the answer that they would want from a graduating senior in college, because there's no way they've never had that experience before. So, I mean, that's a great honest answer of, I have no idea.
And it's important to understand that I don't know is a good answer. A lot of the times what I found is companies are not looking for people who have the answers, but they're looking at the skills people have in communicating and trying to figure out where they fit in and how they can be effective at getting to a solution. Because a lot of the times in the working world, you're not going to know all the answers. It's not going to be a formula approach or anything like that. It's going to be abstract, creative thinking.
Can you give us maybe an example or two of a specific project you did work on where you got to learn more about these skills and put them into practice?
Yeah, I sure can. One project I was able to lead on was pretty interesting. There's a metal foundry in Michigan that was previously, they essentially melted their metal for their process and casting using coal for heat. And due to environmental regulations, they were required to go all electric. And we ended up being the utility that worked with them. So we had to install a substation dedicated for them that fed electric furnaces. So that's kind of a whole different game, and it's more of a unique installation. So you have to learn what these machines do. And in our case, we have to learn how they affect the grid. So when we're making decisions about what to put in from a high level, we're thinking about how do we minimize negative impacts on our grid when installing it. So that's just kind of an example of, all right, we're installing power systems, but we also have to learn all the characteristics about this company's process, what their melt cycles are, how often they run, how much power they pull, and how quickly it ramps up, all kinds of things like that.
Wow. So you start this project out and, okay, say you get, maybe you get assigned to this project and you're saying, okay, you go do this dive with the customer, understand their requirements. And then your next step is to sit down in CAD and start dragging and dropping blocks in. And I guess, how does the next step go?
The next step comes with an electrical simplified equivalent of the facility. We call it a one line. Mainly because it's one line representing three-phase power. And it's intended to be simple and give a high-level overview of it. Stepping back and talking about CAD work, that's another thing to touch on. A lot of larger companies, it seems like, might often start engineers in entry-level positions working in AutoCAD and doing design and such as that. Wolverine actually has a CAD department. They have CAD designers. So I really don't do any hands-on CAD work. I work with a CAD designer that's assigned to the project and essentially make hand markups and pull designs together. And we have a kind of a volley back and forth of drawings of markups and changes and getting to what we call done.
Yeah, I imagine that's quite the, you know, it's quite the team effort, as it continues to be a theme of this podcast. This idea of the engineering task at hand is always so large that it's many people working together, many people of different backgrounds working together. And so it sounds like another great example there where you work with a team to essentially assemble the package that you want to propose or submit. And then you do that. And is that the step? You submit a package and it gets approved and then you start building?
In a sense, yes. Yes, that's what it is. The engineer's role here is physically there's structures and they're spaced apart and they have to be so high above ground for safety codes and things like that. So we have to know that. And we also have to know how to rate the facility to handle the amount of power going through it, choose components. We have to design control systems for the different apparatus that sectionalize that system. So the engineer is still quite busy dealing with all that, as well as specifying and ordering equipment that's going to meet the needs.
So are the parts of your work that you're doing for this kind of a combination of doing like mathematical calculations in some way, and then also speccing out parts as part of the design?
Yeah, that's correct. And following... There's large libraries of standards, different organizations, whether you want to talk about ANSI or IEEE. IEEE has a very heavy library and standards that we need to follow, as well as the National Electric Safety Code. So that's another branch, I'll call it, of things to learn, is getting up to speed on codes and what has to be what.
Yeah, that's a whole challenge in itself. I mean, there's reading massive amount of standards is, I doubt, anyone's thing they want to do on a Saturday, but there's a lot of good information to be had in them. And so you got to kind of get yourself adjusted with the important ones and kind of what information you need to watch out for. Because ultimately, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you're the PE on the project, you're responsible for the safety of the structure. Are you essentially signing off that the structure is safe?
Yes. Yes, for the areas that I'm competent in, of course. We have some civil engineers on staff that design our transmission lines and whatnot, and so I can check structure calcs and whatnot against them, because that's an area that I'm not proficient in. But all the electrical side of it is my way in and sign off for being safe for the public. Because you think about these facilities, they're fenced in, but there's still a chance for someone in the public to walk up and touch the fence and get electrified in a certain scenario. So we're making sure everyone is out of any kind of hazard's way.
Yeah, it sounds like during this, I'm going to call it the design phase. There's just a lot of things going on, a lot of moving parts, a lot of parts that you're picking, a lot of people that you're interacting with. You also mentioned before that you handle the financials too. Is that another thing you're handling and being responsible for during this design process?
Yes. Yeah. That falls under the project management side. As far as, I mean, you have a budget to work with and utilities, a lot of these components are kind of big dollar items. So it's, you got to be careful to make sure you're on track. And more importantly, to know when you can project that you're going to be off track, not that you're going to get in trouble, but that you can communicate that and come to a resolution.
That is probably definitely a skill that it takes to learn there. If things change regards to budget or planning or whatever, and communicating that to the customer, what is that like a little bit, being in charge of it? And then when you have to go and say to someone, well, things have changed from what we originally planned, and now we're having to do X instead of Y. What does that look like from kind of the project management perspective?
It's not too bad. Often what I've found, there's sound reason for the changes, and being on top of that and being able to reference back to some fundamental concepts is key. The most important thing you can do in the engineering field is be able to talk to anyone on the street and have them understand what you're saying. And the same sense goes to when you're talking to people that aren't involved in the utility and you're working on a project with them. You have to be able to convey, like I said, fundamental concepts of what changes happen or what could influence costs to change as well.
So tying this a little bit to job titles, I think we've kind of merged a couple of different job titles here, but I want people listening to understand, I think, some of the differences. From my understanding, we've talked about the project manager position, project management position that's managing the project. But I think there's also a title of a position here of electrical engineer, or maybe you can help me with the exact title, but maybe another person on the team that's focusing more on picking components and doing design. Is electrical engineer the correct title for that person?
Yeah, I'd say so. In my case, my title when I started at Wolverine was electrical engineer. And I mean, it varies too. There's, in general, if you're the lead engineer on any utility, often you're going to be an electrical engineer for that type of project.
Interesting. So it would be really just be in the job description that you would know that it's for power or doing these types of things?
Yeah, and that's interesting to note on as well. I found there's the job description listed for electrical engineer is fairly generic. But at a utility, there are a lot of different trades that an electrical engineer could do. One of them is physical design of a substation. Another is protection and control engineers that design control systems and whatnot. Another would be a relay engineer. So relay engineers do protection studies for how the protective devices work. Think about it. If you have a tree fall on a line, how do you open up devices to de-energize that line and only drop the minimal amount of load that you need to? So there's, in a sense, you can be an electrical engineer. You'll find some larger utilities, if you're looking for positions, they may call out specifically as what the title is for each trade. You know, you may be applying to be a relay engineer or a protection and control engineer.
Interesting. So it's almost like a sub-sub. So yeah, sub-sub discipline. It's electrical engineering. The sub-discipline of that is power engineering. The sub-discipline of that is the relay or safety type of thing. So yeah, it's interesting to see how it can divide up. But even on these big projects, I imagine you can have multiple power, electrical, relay, safety engineers on the team doing different parts.
Yeah, that's correct. At our place of work, typically there's a relay engineer that does relay settings and coordination studies. And then we have a physical design engineer that pretty much gets the package and builds it and gets it where it needs to be. But they're also dealing with all the rating the facilities for the electrical load that's going to be flowing through and whatnot. But one trade I didn't mention that just came to mind is a maintenance engineer, which is pretty neat because think about it from a perspective of you have one wheelhouse in the company that's building facilities and commissioning them and getting them in service. And once they're in service and anything goes wrong or if there's going to be some modifications, that may be the role of the maintenance engineer to work with field crews and resolve any issues.
It sounds like then you've got this wide array of potential specific jobs that someone with electrical engineering degree could be coming into. And obviously, it's probably difficult to prepare for all those. And like anyone coming into a new job, there's always a lot of mentorship or learning from other people. What is that like in this area, given kind of the wide range of jobs you could have working on the utility? What was it like for you or maybe people at Wolverine specifically for learning these different roles and positions and the specific technical details that go into them?
You start to learn about the roles and positions based on the different classes that universities typically offer. And I think as a student, you can lean towards different areas of study that you may prefer and be more familiar with. And those are things that you talk about in the interview. And they'll be describing what you'll be doing, and I'll help you get a sense for, okay, this pulls mainly from this subset of classes, and hey, I really like doing that. I think I would like this job and pursuing it. But the other thing to consider is being able to get your foot in the door. There's a lot of value in just being exposed to it from the inside and giving it a try. And a lot of companies they find that if you're really strong in an area that they don't have you focused in, they may want to shift you and use your resources to optimize their staff.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a double-edged sword of getting too technical, something that we haven't really talked about thus far on the podcast, but this idea of if you get too specialized, sometimes you can kind of work yourself out of potential jobs. And I think it's always a risk. I mean, it's something that you want to be intentful about. And I think that's a good example of that.
That's a risk, but it's also a preference for some people. You know, some folks really know what they want to do, right, and they want to focus on it and become technical experts on it, which there's nothing wrong with that at all. There's it's either you're going to wear a lot of hats and kind of be a jack of all trades, or you're going to try to narrow into a specific area of study that you're interested in.
Do you find that those are possible paths within your company, or even from what you can tell about the bigger utilities, is that you can stay on the track of, let's say you're a relay engineer, you can just keep becoming more of a technical expert in relay engineering as opposed to going maybe the project management route?
I'd say it depends on the size of the utility. More so with larger utilities, they're going to have more positions available. They're going to be able to have a larger staff, and as such, they're going to have more specialized positions. So not thinking about the project management aspect of it, just from the engineering side alone, at a smaller company, you're going to be expected to excel in multiple areas of study.
Do you feel like the education you had going into it was pretty adequate, that the courses and the classes you take, you mentioned that those are places where you started to learn about this. But do you think that a lot of what you learned in college, once you started kind of focusing in the power side, was pretty applicable to this area?
Yeah, I think the program that Michigan Tech has is great. It really sets you up for all the base knowledge you need to know to get started. The one thing I've noticed is I'm finding that now after working, or even a few years after working in industry, how much more effective it would be to go back and attend those classes again with a different perspective. I would pick up so much more.
Yeah, it continues to be a theme for me. I call it the chicken and egg situation of college, this which one has to come first. And right now, society, we know we're to the point where school comes first, and then experience. But sometimes you wonder what it'd be different if you did experience and then school later, because you'd be able to appreciate it more. But it's a tough call for sure. But it sounds like we've talked about the design phase a lot, but I assume there's also a huge phase that comes obviously after design when you're actually constructing the substation. Can you maybe kind of walk us into that once things are approved? What is your role then after the design phase?
Right. And that was probably the most daunting phase of it all. When I started, the project manager was also leading contractors. So we'd have set up a construction agreement, maybe go out for bids to different contractors. And you start the job. And now you have to work with the contractor on site, and you get to know their organization a little bit from who the general foremen are, the foreman on site, and you have to be there and you have to meet with them pretty much every week, and they're going to have questions and they're going to throw a lot of questions at you, but it's through those questions that you kind of learn where they're coming from, what they need to know, how you can improve your designs to reduce some of those questions. But alone from the contractor and working through all that, there's also the aspect of once it's built and you're testing everything and commissioning it, then you start to get involved with field crews at utility, technicians and whatnot. And I've learned a large amount from our field techs because they're working in this every day. And I can't state enough how valuable their experience is. And the most important thing there is just being willing to learn and understand that, well, you're the engineer, you have all this college experience and whatnot, but you know what? You may not be the expert in all these areas. So you have to humble yourself down a little bit and grasp all opportunities to learn. And that's really the best way to excel.
That's a really good point. I think in a lot of ways we can think, especially when dealing with people whose job title is technician, there can always be that kind of that feeling of a divide between engineer and technician in a lot of different industries. But just because someone maybe doesn't have the same education, that doesn't mean that they don't know a lot just by having the years and the experience working on things in lots of different ways. So that's I found that to be really important in my job too. Mm-hmm. But so John, currently, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the station engineering manager. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I guess I've been the manager for about a year now.
Okay, so what was that like? As a manager, then I assume that you are a people leader in charge of leading the team at this point?
Right, I am. And I'm still holding a couple projects. We're kind of heavy in construction right now, and without wanting to bog down everyone, I take on a few projects with that as well.
What has that been like for you then, switching from more the engineering technical role to kind of a little bit more the managerial role?
It's a little bit different, but it wasn't a flip of the switch. I think kind of the way things were progressing for me in developing, I was sort of fitting into this more of a leadership role, because you don't have to be a manager to be a leader, and it's kind of the first step into it. But the one part of it that you pick up as a manager is working with employees and their needs, their life needs, things like evaluations and whatnot. That's a whole nother spin. And that's something that isn't really educated formally for most people in most standard courses. But something really cool is that our organization realized that. And they developed an internal leadership training that lasts, and they've only had two sessions of it, and a session of it is a year. Think of that. But they decided to invest in succession planning, understanding that there's a lot of good folks in the organization, and they wanted to help build that culture and give people the opportunity to receive the tools they need to do from the job right at work.
That's great. I think that's awesome that they see that as a need. Because for one thing that's always interesting to me, I think sometimes in companies, people rise to the level that they're the worst at, meaning that if you're a really good lower level employee, then you'll move you up. And then if you do really good at that job, then they'll move you up. And then you stop moving once you stop performing well. And I think what's interesting about what you're talking about there is this idea of, well, if we don't train the leaders, we're going to have all these people moving up who are then not going to be successful because they don't have the tools. I think another theme that you bring about, John, that I think is great, is this idea of you got to be willing to learn and try new things. And you did that when you got out of undergrad. And it sounds like you're doing that a ton now. You're back in that, I'm doing something new, something different. I got to learn. And you're trying to be a sponge and absorb whatever you can. And so I think that's great when companies recognize that their talented people are rising and they are having a need to relearn new things. And they want to be able to do that, but they need the tools to be able to do that effectively. It sounds like is your kind of current situation being a sponge.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Current situation, but more of a continued education through the career. And that's one thing I've understood too, is in any engineering profession, continued education throughout the career is essential. I mean, you have to know what the norms are, what's happening globally with what your field is. You can learn from other people's mistakes. You can find out about new technologies that are happening. You can find new ways to make things better. And you can never stop doing that.
What does the potential career path look like for you? What are your options as you've moved up to a manager now? Where can you go from here if you want to?
Well, I could progress in the leadership field. I think if I were to quote move up from my position, it would be a vice president position with the way our organization is set up. You get in some larger fields, and there's positions of different seniority that don't exist where I work. And one of those is principal engineer. For instance, they don't have that at position currently at Wolverine, but they do have a senior engineer position. So ultimately I could move up in the managerial world. But something important to understand is people always have the option to go back to being a more technically driven position, if you will, if that's what you want to do. In my case, I think I'm going to progress where I'm at right now and feel it out. I think I enjoy being able to have a leadership and leadership voice for the organization and helping lead where we go, what we build, why we build, how to make the overall system stronger and reliable.
Yeah, I guess going back to where you started the conversation, John, this idea of, you know, you said it was your second year in undergrad and you were thinking, how can I make an impact? It sounds like you've moved into a position where you're making an even bigger impact because you're not only making an individual project successful, but you're also able to set the vision for the future in some ways of how, you know, the big organization will move, which sounds like it has even more impact, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So what challenges, I guess, are, you know, so you talked about, you know, the different things with working with people and things like that, but it sounds like you're still very involved on the technical side as a manager. What are the challenges technically now for you as a manager? Are they equation based or are they just different? Meaning, like, are you still solving equations that are challenging, or is it really just something different that I can't even guess?
That's kind of a hard question to answer. From a high level, I think one of the big advents for engineering that's been shaping the way everything happens is computers and computer software. You know, one of the ways I like to look at it is we go to class in college, and we often end up crunching a lot of numbers and learning how to do everything longhand. And for us, a specific example is the power flow solution. So you solve the power flow solution and you have this transmission network, which is just like a large net, and all the strings in the net represent different lines and all the places where the lines intersect are stations. And you solve this power flow equation and you find out what the voltages are at all the different nodes, all the different intersections and things like that, and where the power is flowing. And in order to do that by hand, it requires an iterative iterative process. And it takes up pages and pages of running these iterations and trying to solve, get a solution that converges. Every time you may end up with something that diverges and you have to start over from the beginning. Either way, what I'm getting at is it takes a long time and there's a lot of room for error. And you learn how to do that. And then you get to the working world and you find out you have a piece of software and you set up a couple parameters and hit go and it does it all for you, right? But the important thing that you have to know and take away from your classes is even that computer program doesn't always converge. And if it's not working, you have to know how it works and how to get it to solve correctly.
Yeah, we definitely learn a lot in college about how to do things the long way. And there's always that caveat of when we're learning about software, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And you still have to be able to understand what the software is doing to understand if the results you get have any value. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it doesn't matter. Otherwise you're going to look at the pretty picture, look at the numbers print out. You're going to take it as law and you're going to go with it. So I think that's a really good point. Yep. But thinking about classes then and where you are, does grad school fit into the equation at all of a career path like the one you're on, or is it not really necessary?
There's a lot of debate in that. I think it really depends on someone's specific situation. Grad school for a master's in engineering could be useful for a lot of people. I think on the track that I'm in, master's in business administration might be more useful for the tools that I need to get any further. So that one would probably be more valuable. And that's just my personal opinion on it.
Yeah. Are there a lot of people within the organization that do have either MBAs or master's in engineering?
I'm finding there's more folks with, at least in my field division, with MBAs.
I think it's interesting to see how different careers, you know, different paths, different fields, you know, sometimes a master's isn't needed. It's not, you know, if you want to be specific, it can be helpful. Maybe if you really want to dive into relays and you want to get more technical knowledge, you can use the master's as the tool to that. And I think that's one of the bigger themes is use the master's intentfully for what you're trying to do. If you want to gain more technical knowledge, then a master's in engineering is focusing in that technical knowledge. If you want to get more knowledge in human resources and business, the MBA can be that tool. And so it allows us to think about getting a master's as a tool that we're using to accomplish something. And sometimes you don't need to use those tools. And I think that's okay. And I think it's good for people to know that so that people don't go and get a master's when they don't need one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the other thing, you know, if you're uncertain on further education routes, the other thing to consider is that companies will sometimes have funding, and they may help fund your desired continued education for different degrees if it helps support your position in their company. So there's always an option of understanding that you don't always have to do that first. You can first start to work and get an understanding for what would best fit your need and then continue from there.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, John, as we get closer towards the end of the podcast here, I'd like to wrap up the show with kind of bigger picture thoughts, you know, thinking back to you as a second year engineering student, and now you're managing, you know, new engineers as they come into the field. What advice would you give yourself back then? Or what would you want to say to yourself to help you be more successful?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think I've been fairly happy with where I am. So kind of as a keynote, I'm happy the way things went. I don't know if I'd really want to change anything. If I were to send a message back, it would definitely be to assure myself that a smaller company is where I would want to be. I like that culture. I like being able to interact with different levels of management. I talk to the CEO of the company often, and I have access to him, and I think that is extremely valuable. It's awesome. It's an opportunity that you don't always get it at a larger company where you get lots of layers of management and whatnot. So it all really depends on what you're going for. Larger companies have great perks. They have a lot of benefits. There's, I'm not knocking on them at all. It's just which route do you want to go, and what do you want your day-to-day work life to be like?
Yeah, John, I think that's a big area that a lot of people don't think about also when thinking about what job they want to work at or what company specifically they want to work at is the size of it. And in general, when you trend smaller, you're going to be doing more and there's going to be a lot less layers and it's going to be different in that way. And when you work for a bigger company, it's going to have different advantages and disadvantages. And that's a decision that as a person looking for a job, you get to make based on which companies you look at. And I don't think people think about that. I think they just maybe, go for whatever companies are posting jobs, but that can be a specific decision you make if you think you want to go towards one way or the other, as opposed to just randomly walking up to companies.
Well, for anyone listening to this podcast, the big thing to take away is I didn't know that. That's something I had to learn and get exposed to, and that's fine too. And that's where this podcast is so valuable is you can hear, oh, it's okay that maybe that's a piece of information that helps someone investigate into companies with a different perspective of what the organization looks like, what the size is, what their exposure is going to be.
Definitely. I think that's a really good point that small doesn't mean bad or less successful. It's got its own set of perks. So definitely agree with you.
Well, great, John. Thanks for your time, man. Really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been awesome learning about what it's like to be a power engineer. We wish you nothing but the best moving forward, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Good time being on here. I hope I was helpful for your mission. And I'm just glad you guys are putting this on. I think it's pretty cool. And I hope you get a lot of other good candidates to tell their story and try to fumble through like I did and pick out the best highlights of what may help someone who's either a little confused or just wants to help be pushed in the right direction or get the right tools to do that.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Well, Brendan, I really enjoyed that conversation. It started off with a lot of different things that I wasn't familiar with in this whole cooperative thing. I didn't have a co-op growing up. And so it's interesting to hear how the electrical grid works and has these different, history to it. I love how John got into the history. I think that's fantastic. That made me smile. There's people out there that they start to list that kind of stuff. I can tell they really, really like what they do. And I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, it definitely seems like John is happy that he started out here, that he's kind of moving up and doing things that he likes, which I think is, I wouldn't say rare, but I think it's really awesome when you see someone who has found something that they really enjoy doing. And they want to keep continuing it. They're not looking to make a change or anything.
Right. Especially in such a serendipitous way. I love, his starting out of, I just want to help people. And from there, and he just picks it. And I think that's such a great story. Start with the theme, or at least at the time, the thing you think you want to do big picture. It's who knows, no one knows exactly what they want to do, but what's the general theme that you believe in and helping people? Okay. What can I do that helps people? I think that's a great way to even get into it,
Yeah, making a difference can come in a lot of different ways, and especially in engineering. Like, he's doing it by making sure people get power and that the grid is taken care of in certain ways. And I think, a lot of the people that we've talked to so far on the show have been making a difference in lots of different ways and impacting people's lives in ways they might not realize.
Yeah, I think that's the awesome part about being an engineer is you can, you make an impact in your way, man. That's awesome. One of the main things, though, I guess highlights, if I will, from the show that I really, really took to heart was this idea of small companies can be, the best place for you to go, to the point where you get there and you'll want to stay there like John, and you wouldn't even change it if you could to go to a big company, because small companies have their own benefits. And I think it's important to think about that intentfully when you're trying to decide where you want to work. Like, it is a decision that you can make to work for a small company versus a big company, and that can be advantageous to you depending on what you like. And I think it's important to think about it specifically like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think we can see some of those advantages just in John's experience when he's talking about starting off and being an engineer. It's also kind of like a project manager, having, you know, technical responsibility and financial responsibility and people responsibility in some ways of working with the subcontractors and the clients and all those things. It sounds like he gets to touch a lot of different ways, which when you work in a big company, there might be an individual person who does each one of those things. So you only get a small sliver of an entire project. Whereas with him, he gets kind of a wide breadth of what's going on and gets to learn a lot in doing that.
Right. And he didn't know that ahead of time, you know, and I think that's great. And I think that's another great example of probably the biggest trait that I found that it sounds like made him successful is this idea of keep learning and always be willing to learn and try new things. And that's always going to do you well. And I think he's really lived that. And I think that's helped him out a lot. And it sounds like his organization appreciates that.
Totally agree. Once you stop learning is when you tend to stagnate in your career and in your technical abilities and a lot of things. Being complacent and not wanting to learn more is never really a good place where you want to end up at, especially early on in your career. When you get comfortable with something and don't have any desire to grow in it, that's not always a recipe for success later on.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's hard to push yourself to do new things, but when you do new things, you learn. Like when John going into this management role, it sounds like it's very different than what he was comfortable and what he was used to, but it sounds like he's learning a lot and really liking it, and that keeps it exciting. So I think that's another good reason to keep trying to do new things is it keeps work exciting. It also probably means you fail more often on an average day, which is hard, but if you I think he said humble. You got to humble yourself when talking with technicians is what he's talking about. But I think you got to humble yourself even when you're trying to learn. You know, he humbled himself when he talked to the technicians when he was learning to be an electrical engineer. But I'm sure he's humbling himself now as he learns to be a good manager. And he really is by acknowledging what he doesn't know and saying that, yeah, I want to do these leadership training classes because I don't know things and I want to learn. And I think that's absolutely fantastic and a great mentality.
Yeah, totally. I'm glad that we got to talk to him and he got to share that with us. It was helpful. I mean, even for me, thinking about ways where I might not want to grow, or I might want to think that I've been doing something long enough where I know all there is, and being like, no, like, you have to keep learning, you have to keep growing if you want to keep doing more and not just be in the same spot forever. So yeah, I'm really glad we got to talk to John today.
Likewise, man. Well, good to talk to you, Brennan. Have a good week, man.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Engineer Your Career with Troy Bauman and Brennan Timrak. For more information about the show, visit our website at eycpodcast.com. There you can find show notes for each episode and get in touch with Troy and I. If you or someone you know are an engineer with an interesting or even not so interesting career journey and would like to be on the show, go on the website, send us a short bio, and we may just invite you to come on and share your story. And finally, if you want to show your support, please rate, review, like, or subscribe to the show on your podcast player of choice.